Just a little while ago, I was talking to Sanjay, and in the course of our discussion, a few points came up, and so we decided that we would discuss about those points here, so that others also can participate in this discussion. Few very pertinent points came up, and I will discuss about them in some gradual succession. The first point that I will discuss is why, although there are so many incarnations, Krishna gets the maximum importance. Before answering this point, I will discuss about one point just to make the understanding easy, and that is, what do we understand about this expression God? What does God actually mean? To make this point clear, I will cite an example. One very famous scientist who was actually a theist, he was a believer of God, although he was considered to be one of the greatest scientists of the world. And he had a friend, a very close friend, who was a philosopher, and he was an atheist. He did not believe in God. And often they used to have discussions among themselves. The scientist used to try to make his philosopher friend understand about God's existence, but that atheistic philosopher he would not accept. So one day, this philosopher friend came to his laboratory, and there in the laboratory he saw the model of the solar system with the sun in the middle. Different planets were moving around due to some arrangements of gears and levers around that sun in different velocities. So this philosopher friend became very impressed, and he asked, who made this? The scientist said, no one made it. Then the philosopher said, how is it possible? Somebody must have made it. Actually, I think you must have made it. But the scientist friend kept on telling, no one made it. It just came. It just came from nowhere. And there was just by chance, all these things got together and they started to move in this way. And the philosopher kept on telling him, no, why are you making fun of me? Why are you joking with me? Please tell me who made it. And finally, the scientist told him that, see, when I show this model to you, and tell you that no one made this, you don't believe me. But when I point out to the night sky, innumerable stars and planets maintaining such a beautiful order, and then I tell you that there must be a creator behind that creation, you don't believe me. See what a big fool you are. So, in order to understand that Supreme Personality, who actually is the Supreme Creator. We do not actually have to go very far. We can simply use our intelligence. And immediately we can see. Say, you have a watch in your hand. Now, if somebody comes and tells you that there was a big bang and the watch just appeared from nowhere, will you believe that? Or if somebody says there was a primordial soup, some liquid in the primitive stage, they just got together, and then through some strange arrangement, some inconceivable arrangement of nature, it all crystallized or it all became solidified and it became your watch. Will you believe that? No intelligent man will believe that. So a small little thing like a watch, we can't expect that it just came out of a big bang or out of a primordial soup or just by some arrangement of atoms and molecules getting together. No. Then what to speak of this creation around us, which is so wonderful? Consider the creation around us. There is a tiny little seed, and that seed is planted on the ground, and from the seed comes out a seedling. And in due course of time, that seedling grows into a tree, and the tree bears fruits, innumerable fruits, and in each fruit there is a seed. Inside that seed there is a tree. In that tree there are innumerable fruits and innumerable seeds, and in each of those seeds there is a tree. So who will ever say that that creation, that such a wonderful creation, this is just one small little example I gave you of a seed. But you know, like you look at the nature around us and you will see that everything, every single aspect of this nature is wonderful. And it all happened just by chance or by accident. This theory that creation came out of accident has been very wonderfully exemplified by one American philosopher. He commented that there was a explosion. This theory that creation came out of accident or by chance is something like saying that there was an accident, there was an explosion in a printing press, and the types flew and fell in such an order that Webster Dictionary was printed. And so now, let us begin from this premise. This creation has a creator behind it. And this creator is maintaining every single aspect of the creation. Now this way we may find, ultimately we'll come to one person who is the Supreme. There's a Supreme Person behind this creation and the maintenance of this creation. Now ultimately when the time comes, he will also take care of the destruction. Now that person is God. Now you may call him by any name, but the fact of the matter is that that is the person that we are actually identifying. So that person, according to the Vedic understanding, is called Bhagavan. Now this word, this Vedic expression are not just some haphazard expressions. The names or the expressions that are used in the Vedas always bear some significance. Now this word, Bhagavan, has a specific meaning. Like, how many of you, I guess all of you know Hindi or Gujarati. Most of you know. So, are you familiar with the expression Balavan? What does Balavan mean? That means, Bal means strength, and Balavan means one who has strength. Are you familiar with the expression Dhanavan? What does it mean? What is the meaning of dhan? Wealth. So what is the meaning of dhanavan? One who is wealthy. Are you familiar with the expression gyanavan? So now, you tell me what is the meaning of the word bhagavan? So balavan means one who has bal. Dhanavan means one who has dhan. So Bhagavan means one who has bhag, right? So one who has bhag is Bhagavan. Now what is the meaning of bhag? This word bhag has been explained in the scriptures as Aisharjasya Samagrasya Virjasya Jashasya Shriya Jnana Vairagayaschaiva Shannang Iti Bhagangana. So one who possesses all the wealth, all the strength, all the beauty, all the fame, all the knowledge, and all renunciation, he is Bhagavan. Now let us consider who is that person. Now let's go step by step. Now, he is the one who possesses all the wealth. Now, do you know anyone who possesses all the wealth? You know of many rich people. But can anyone claim that he possesses all the wealth? No. Do you know anyone who can claim that he possesses all the strength, all beauty, all fame, all knowledge, and all renunciation? Now in this material world, we do not find anyone who can make that claim. There are some people, those who have a little bit of that, these opulences, and when they have, they become worshipable. Like if somebody is very strong, people worship him. But what is his strength? Compared to a man, he may be very strong. But compared to an elephant, he is like an ant. An elephant can just pick up cassius clay like a small little toy and smash him in no time. But human society is worshipping cassius clay. Now he is Muhammad Ali. So this way we can see in this material platform all these opulences are possessed to a very, very limited extent by different individuals. But no one can claim that he possesses all these opulences. Now, does it mean that there is no one who has this rightful claim? No. There is someone. The Vedas are saying there is someone who possesses all these six opulences, and he is Ekam Eva Adritya Parama Purusha, meaning he is one without a second supreme person. So that personality who is one without a second is Bhagavan, who possesses all these. Now that one without a second supreme person, although he is one, but he has the ability to expand himself into innumerable forms. Like we cannot expand ourselves into more than one. But he can expand himself into not only more than one, but to unlimited forms. And that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that Ekam Eva Advitiya Parama Purusha, Bhagavan, he has many names according to his qualities and activities. Just like in English also, you get the expression God is addressed as omnipotent. Omnipotent means all-powerful. Now, who is all-powerful? Who is all-powerful? John Major? No. The all-powerful is that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Omniscient. He knows everything. That's why another name of God is omniscient. Similarly, in Sanskrit, God has many names according to his qualities. And one of his qualities is, he is all attractive. He is all attractive. And in Sanskrit, that all attractive aspect of the Lord is called Krishna. Karshati, Karshati iti Krishna. Karshan means to attract. Karshan Venu Swanair Gopi, Gopi Natha Shriyastuna. Karshan means to attract. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead attracts everyone. Therefore, he has a name, Krishna. Similarly, he is the supreme enjoyer. Therefore, his name is Rama. Ram, the word Ram is coming from Raman. Raman means enjoy. And he is the supreme enjoyer, therefore he is Rama. He maintains the entire creation. That's why his name is Vishnu. He is the source and shelter of all living beings, Naras. Therefore, he is Narayan. So in this way, this one without a second, although he is one without a second, he has innumerable names. And of all these names, which one is most attractive? Krishna, why? Because this name signifies that he is all attractive. Like everybody wants to become attractive. Everybody, let's put it this way. Everybody wants to love something, right? Now what does one want to love? One loves the objects that are attractive. Isn't it? Like you are going down the street and you see a beautiful car. Because you become attracted to that, you fall in love with the car. You see a beautiful house. Because it's attractive, you fall in love with that house. So similarly, who is the ultimate attractive? But somebody may be attracted by a very nice car, but some other person may not even look at it. Somebody may be attracted to a house, beautiful house. Other person may not even look at it. Somebody may be attracted to a very beautiful looking woman, but others may not be attracted to him at all, her at all. But Krishna is all attractive. There's no one who cannot remain without being attracted to Krishna. Provided he becomes exposed to Krishna. When one becomes properly exposed to Krishna, then immediately he becomes attracted to Krishna and he falls in love with Krishna. So now I will go to answer Sanjay's point. That why Krishna is getting so much importance. although there are so many incarnations. There are various reasons. One reason I just explained now, but I will discuss about other reasons. Now, the other reasons are different incarnations are different expansions of God. The incarnations are expansions of God. And in that sense, there is a little difference between God and His incarnation. For example, although God and His incarnations are, there is no difference. Like, His entire energy and His entire potency is invested. When He expands, it is He Himself who expands. It's not that one expansion of God is different from another expansion. They actually possess the same potency, the same personality. But in incarnation, He doesn't display the full potency. In Brahma Samhita, it has been described in this way, that Deepachideva Dashantaram Abhupetya Deepayate Vibrita Hetu Samana Dharma Jas Tadri Yeva Hi Vishnu Cha Taya Vibhati Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhaya. It's describing that just as one lamp, one original lamp, light other lamps. Now, once the lamps are lit, they give out the same amount of light. But there is an original lamp who actually lit all the other lamps. Similarly, Krishna, Govinda, Adi Purusha, original personality, he is the source of all incarnation. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam also. In Bhagavatam, there is a detailed description of all incarnations. 24 different incarnations have been described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then, after that description, it has been mentioned that just as innumerable rivers are coming out of the ocean and merging back into the ocean, similarly, there are innumerable incarnations of the Supreme Personality of God. Ete chamsha kala pumsha Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. These incarnations are different parts and parcels. Parts and parts of the parts. But Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. So Krishna, because He is the original Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, that's why He is most attractive. Now, I will explain also why I'm making this point here, or why scriptures are saying that. One thing I can assure you, that whatever I'm saying, it is not my word. It is not that I am concocting something, or because I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, I am presenting Krishna as the greatest. It is not that. Whatever I am presenting is from the scriptures and which I understood, which I received from my divine spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, in Srimad Bhagavatam, this description has been made very, very clear that original personality is Krishna. And then he expands into different incarnations. Now, because Krishna is the original personality, He displays His qualities, His divine qualities, to the fullest extent. Whereas in the incarnations, those qualities are not manifested so much. So, again, in Srimad Bhagavatam, that has been clarified. how Krishna is the origin of personality. Krishna is the original personality. He is the original personality in Vrindavan. Not just Vrindavan in this, in India, in Uttar Pradesh. Vrindavan is in the spiritual sky. And this Vrindavan on the earth planet in India, that is actually an extension of the spiritual Vrindavan. Every earth planet has a Vrindavan. And when Krishna performs his pastimes, he performs his pastimes in that Vrindavan. How? Just like in London, you have an US consulate, US embassy. Similarly, when you go to France, in Paris also you'll find an US embassy. In Rome you'll find an US embassy. So these embassies are the place which is an extension of that country. Like in England, US embassy is actually the extension of United States of America. Although this country is in England, although this US embassy is in England, it's inside England, but it is not actually England. The US embassy is the property of US government. They do not follow the US British laws. They do not follow the English law, although it is in England. They follow the law of the United States of America. Similarly, the spiritual sky, Krishna's abode, the spiritual sky has an extension in this material nature. And these extensions are called dham. Anyway, Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, resides in his eternal abode, Golok Vrindavan. And in Golok Vrindavan, Krishna's first expansion is Balaram. Then Balaram expands into Chaturguha, Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. These four expansions or incarnations called Chaturguha. Then this Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, they are situated in Dwarka. Then from this Shankarshan, there is an expansion of Narayan. Innumerable Narayans expand. So in this way, Krishna expands. This Narayan also has Chaturguha. And the Shankarshan from this Chaturguha expands into Karanadokshai Vishnu. Then Karanadokshai Vishnu expands into Garbhodokshai Vishnu. And then Garbhodokshai Vishnu again expands into Kshirodokshai Vishnu. So, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are detailed explanations of that. Now, because Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is considered to be the most important aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, I'll go on to the next point. The next aspect of this is that our attraction, actually the degree of our attraction depends upon the quality of the person. Like, we see that whenever we become attracted to something or somebody, we become attracted due to certain qualities. Now, wherever the qualities are, the degree of quality is greater, the attraction also becomes greater. Now, in Krishna, all the qualities are fully manifest. That has been explained in the Vedic scriptures, that, you see, in a jiva, there are 50 qualities are there. And a jiva can at the most possess 50 qualities. And all these 50 qualities are most perfectly manifested in Brahma, who is the topmost of the jivas. Then in Lord Shiva, there are 5 more qualities. So Lord Shiva has 55 qualities. Then Narayan has 60 qualities. But in Krishna, there are 64 qualities. These 4 extra qualities that Krishna has are not even present in Narayan. Therefore, Krishna is most attractive. Now let us consider another thing. You see, Krishna is Lila Purushottam. Lila Purushottam means the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the feature where He is displaying His wonderful activities, pastimes. So Krishna plays His activities, He plays His pastimes in such a wonderful way that He naturally becomes all attractive. His activities are extremely wonderful. For example, like Lord Krishna as Lord Ramchandra is Marjada Purushottam. Marjada Purushottam means that He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead depicting or displaying His opulence, as the Supreme Lord who has come down to establish law and order. Like a king, Lord Ramchandra is an ideal king. Now king, you automatically develop awe and reverence to a king. Can you approach a king just like that? You cannot. The king is far away from you. But he is your well-wisher and he is taking care of you. So that is the role that Lord Ramchandra is playing. Marjada Purushottam. But Krishna is playing the role of Lila Purushottam. He is just acting in whichever way he likes. And because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can act in whichever way he likes. For example, Krishna is stealing butter. Krishna is fooling around with the gopis. Krishna is playing all kinds of mischievous games with his friends. Now, this way, Krishna is very near to us. Whereas Ramchandra is not. Ramchandra is an ideal king. He is far removed. Krishna is, of course, because Krishna is playing a role like that, that doesn't mean that anybody has the right to enter into Krishna's pastimes in that way. No. Sometimes, say for example, in France, the kings in medieval time, the kings used to go to the villages. And they used to live like villagers. The kings used to get tired of this royal profile. So they used to, just to have a break from this royal situation in the palace, they used to go to the village. But actually the whole village used to be built. And the king used to go with his immediate entourage. He used to take his immediate entourage, and they used to live like villagers for a break. Now could anyone and everyone go and enter into that village and live with the king? No. Only some very special ones, like those who are very close to the king, got a chance to live with the king like an ordinary villager. And king used to deal with him in that way. Actually this is a perverted reflection of Krishna's activities. Now Krishna actually is playing In Vrindavan, Krishna is playing the role of a cowherd boy. He's a village boy. He's not even a city boy. He's not only an ordinary person from a city. He's a village boy. That also not the son of a landlord, big landlord. He's just a cowherd boy. From morning till night, what he does, he tends the cows in the forest. Now consider just this profile of Krishna allows us to counsel or think of him as someone who is so close. So, in this way, Krishna plays the role where he displays his all attractive feature. Now, we can even go a little further, and that is, you see, when we speak of relationship, there are five positive relationships. Those five positive relationships are a mutual relationship, servitorship or relationship as a servant, then relationship as a friend, relationship as father and mother, and relationship as husband-wife. Now if we consider that mutual relationship, mutual is something like you see a neighbor, you know he is there, you see him coming and going, but you do not actually have any rapport with him, any exchange with him. Isn't it? So he is there, but you do not have any kind of relationship with him as such. It's mutual. Now, closer than that relationship is the relationship that you have with your servant. Of course, in England, no one can afford a servant excepting the Queen. at least the understanding, the concept you can understand, and that the relationship with the servant is more intimate than the neighbor whom you know is living in the house next door but do not have any reciprocation. Then the relationship that you have with your friend is even more intimate than the relationship you have with your servant. Now the relationship that you have with your parents are even more intimate than with your friends. And the relationship between the husband and wife is most intimate. So this way we can see that there are degrees of relationship. Now when we look at these relationships, then we find, or then we see that in Vaikuntha, where Lord is present as Narayan in the spiritual sky, the relationship is just based on neutrality and servitorship. In Vaikuntha, everyone is the servant of Vishnu, servant of Narayan. There is no friend. He doesn't have a friend there. Even though Lakshmi Devi is there, but she is serving him as a maid servant. Now, in Vaikuntha, we do not find friendship. Now, looking for friendship, we come to Ayodhya, where when Lord Ramchandra asked Hanuman, Hanuman, what do you want? You can desire anything. So Hanuman is telling Ramchandra, my lord, if you are so pleased with me, then please give me your embrace. And Lord Ramchandra embraced Hanuman. So here we see that Hanuman, who is in servitorship, he is aspiring for friendship. And that friendship is granted to some extent. Hanuman got a little bit of friendship of Lord Ramchandra. But that friendship is not properly manifest. But then we come to Dwarka, where we find that Krishna has friends. In Dwarka, Krishna has friends. Uddhava, etc., Satyaki, there Krishna, they have a friendly relationship with Krishna. And in Dwarka, looking for Vatsalya, in Dwarka we find that Vatsalya, although friendship is present, but Vatsalya, parental love, is not present. Because in Dwarka, although Mother Devaki and Vasudev and Rohini are present, but they all know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. They know that Krishna is Bhagavan. Therefore, they don't treat Krishna as their son, although they are Krishna's father and mother. They are looking for Vatsalya, or parental love, with the Lord. We come to Mathura. Krishna is just born, and Devaki's heart is filled with parental affection, motherly affection. And she is thinking that here my new child is born and Kamsa will come and kill him. So she is extremely worried. And at the same time, she is extremely happy to see such a beautiful child that she gave birth to. Same thing with Vasudev. But very soon, that relationship of friendship turned into, parental love turned into awe and reverence. When Krishna displayed, Mother Devaki and Vasudeva became very worried that now Kamsa will come and kill this child. And at that time Krishna assured them, don't worry, Kamsa cannot kill me. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he showed his four-armed Narayan form. So as soon as they saw Krishna as Narayan, then immediately their affection, parental affection, turned into point reverence. They started to offer prayers to him with folded hands. So although there is a tinge of parental love manifesting there, but it could not blossom. Now looking for parental love, the developed parental love, we come to Vrindavan. There, Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj treat Krishna just like their own little child. Even if they see that Krishna is performing so many wonderful activities, they don't care about that. To them, Krishna is just a little child. Therefore, Mother Jasoda chases Krishna with a stick in her hand, and then, after she catches Krishna, she tries to tie him up with a rope. Just like a mother treats her ordinary child. So this kind of dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we don't find anywhere else. Nanda Maharaj tells Krishna, Krishna, please bring my shoes. Now Krishna picks up Nanda Maharaj's shoes on his head and carries it, brings it to him. And not only parental, then we find that the conjugal love also is most perfectly manifest in Vrindavan. So in this way, we can see that Krishna in Vrindavan is displaying the most wonderful aspect of himself. And this relationship that he allows his devotees to develop there is not available anywhere else. Therefore, that personality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan, is most available. That is, he was telling that he came across the Bhagavad Gita, and the author of the Bhagavad Gita wrote a long introduction. Not author, the translator probably. Because the author of Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. And he said that in the introduction, that person, the translator, said that, Bhagavad Gita couldn't have been spoken by one person. It has been presented by, it has developed over a long period of time. And different people gave a little bit of input, and as a result of that, it ultimately came to Bhagavad Gita. And another thing he said, that Bhagavad Gita couldn't have been spoken in the Battle of Kurukshetra, because such a long thing, where was the time to speak that? So that Bhagavad Gita was spoken in the battlefield of Kurukshetra couldn't be possible. So I told Sanjay that this question I'll answer downstairs here. So first of all, we have to remember that Supreme Personality of Godhead has inconceivable potency. A kind of potency that he can, in Sanskrit it is called, his Krishna Yogamaya potency is able to aghatan ghatan potiyoshi. She can make impossible possible. So we have to approach with this understanding that inconceivable things can happen by the will of the Lord. Now the person who is translating, first of all, he shouldn't even be allowed to touch Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of translating Bhagavad Gita? A fool and an offender like that should not be even allowed to touch Bhagavad Gita. Actually, you know, in Manu Samhita, anyway, let's not get into that, because let's just try to make the point here. The person who made that comment, he doesn't realize that he is commenting about somebody by whose will innumerable universes are floating in the space. The personality, just by his will, he doesn't even have to touch them with his hands. Just by his will, this innumerable universes are floating in the space. Time is just one aspect of his energy. He is not subject to time, but time, kala, is his energy. And since kala or time is his energy, then he can do whatever he wants to do with that. He can, if he wants, he can expand time. And if he wants, he can contract time. And I'll give you an example how he can do that. About how Krishna can contract time. There was a very old man, old Brahmana, who wanted to go to Badrinath. You know, Badrinath is high up in the Himalayas. And nowadays, of course, you can take a bus or rent a taxi and go to Badrinath. But those days, one had to go to Badrinath on foot. And and it was a very, you know, high up in the mountains. It takes months together to reach there. Now this old Brahmana had a desire to go to Badrinath. And so he set out to go to Badrinath. But because he was old, it took him a long time. And he actually arrived at Badrinath at a time when Badrinarayan, the Lord, was coming down to Joshimath. You see what happens in Badrinath, the winter time, it gets all covered up, covered over with ice. No one can live there, even now. And although there are roads and things, but everybody lives. It's so cold and so high up in the mountain. And for the 6 months of winter, Badrinarayan goes down to a lower altitude in a place called Joshimath. And he stays there for 6 months, and then when the summer starts, then he comes back again. After the winter is over, he comes back again. So, unfortunately, the Brahmana, when he arrived, the Lord's temple was already closed, and he was going to Joshimath. So the Brahmana felt so sad that he came all the way
and he missed the darshan of the Lord. So Brahmana thought that I'll never be able to come here, because this time I just somehow managed to come here, but I won't be able to do it in future. So let me just stay here. I'm just going to stay here. And everyone was going down, so they saw this old man, said, hey, what happened? Why don't you come down, come back with us, come down with us. The Brahmin said, no, I'll stay here. Then they said, are you crazy? Like, everyone is living here, and very soon the snow will start to fall and the whole place will become covered with ice. And for 6 months, the whole place will be covered with ice, and there won't be anyone, and you won't get any food to eat. And actually, you'll become a food to the wolves, who will be roaming around in search of food. So that Brahmana was determined. He said, no, I decided that I'm going to stay here. I came here after a whole lot of trouble, and I couldn't get the darshan of the Lord, so I'll just stay here. If I die, let me die here. So everyone, when they failed to persuade him, they left and went. So the Brahmana was just alone there. So soon the sun set. It was getting dark. Then all of a sudden he saw one noble man, one royal personage, came riding on a horse. And so the man saw him and said, what are you doing here? And so the Brahmana told him that, look, I came here to have the darshan of the Lord, but I couldn't get his darshan. So I decided, when I came, the temple was closed, and it won't open before 6 months. So I decided to just stay here, because I know that I'll never be able to come here again. So he asked, how come you are here? The Brahmana asked him. He said, well, you see, I was going to some place, then I lost my way. And I just happened to come here. And I don't know, maybe tomorrow morning I can find the way, but now it has already become dark, so I do not know where to go. So I decided, I'll also stay here tonight. By the way, let's try to spend some time, let's try to do something. Do you know how to play dice? So the Brahmana said, yes, I know how to play dice. And it was a full moon night. So they started to play dice. And throughout the night, they played dice. The Brahmana and that noble man. And then, when it was morning, they heard some sound of kirtan and beating of drums. And many people were singing the glory of Badrinarayan. So they became very surprised. What happened? And then they found that all these people are coming back. All these people are coming back with Badrinarayan. So when they came and they saw Brahmana, they became very surprised. They said, you're still here. And the Brahmana told them, what happened? You just left last night, yesterday, and you came back today only. So both are surprised. What actually happened? They were surprised that how this man survived for so long. And the Brahmana was surprised that how come they came back so quickly. And then finally, the Brahmana realized that actually the six months have elapsed. Now, he realized that, he wondered, who is that person who came and with whom I played dice the whole night. And he looked around for him everywhere. He couldn't find him. So, now anybody can understand who that person was. Yes. And what he did, he contracted that 6 months into one night. And because he is the Lord of time, he can do that. So, that's why before we delve into these scriptures, we have to understand who are we actually talking about. Now, if we think that Krishna is just an ordinary person, then all the mission is lost. And Krishna himself actually said that. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, avajananti mam mudha manushintanam ashritam param bhavam ajananto mamo bhuta maheshwaram. Avajananti mam mudha. Avajananti means cannot understand. And therefore they deride me. They humiliate me. They laugh at me. Who? Mudhas. Mudha, this Sanskrit expression mudha, if it is translated into English, the literal translation will be the first class fools. The first class fools cannot understand my divine nature. Param bhavam ajananto mamo bhuta maheshwara. They do not understand that. And that kind of fools is present all the time, since time immemorial, since Krishna's time, this kind of fools are existing. Like there were fools like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Jarasandha. They couldn't understand Krishna. They insulted him. Shishupal, whenever he met Krishna, he just insulted him. And ultimately what happened? Krishna just called his Sudarshan Chakra and chopped his head off. Actually, Shishupal was Krishna's cousin. And Shishupal's mother, Krishna's aunt, knew that Shishupal was a big offender to Krishna. And she knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She knew that it is that Shishupal will insult and commit great offense to Krishna. Therefore, she begged Krishna that, Krishna, please don't take offense to my son. And Krishna said, okay, 100 offenses I will forgive him. 100 offenses I won't take into consideration. And in Yudhishthira Maharaja's Rajasuya Yajna, Shishupal became envious of Krishna when he was given the highest honor. The greatest honor in that assembly was given to Krishna. And Shishupal couldn't tolerate that. He started to insult, saying that why this honor is offered to him. This Krishna, this Vasudev, when there are so many respectable personalities are present here. Jarasandha is here, Dantavakra is here. So why aren't you recognizing him? Why aren't you recognizing him? Recognizing them? Why are you partially selecting Krishna? Who is he? He is not even a Kshatriya. No one knows who is his father and who is his mother. No one even knows whether he is really the son of Vasudev. And even if he was the son of Vasudev, he was brought up with the cowherd boys. He didn't even get proper upbringing as a Kshatriya. And even when he was in Vrindavan, he was fooling around with women, young women. He is a debauchee. He insulted Krishna in this way. At that time, Bhishma stood up. Bhishma said, the whole world knows me as a brahmachari. I'm famous. Everyone knows my vow of celibacy. Everyone knows me as a brahmachari. And I worship this Krishna. Now, why am I worshipping Krishna, being a brahmachari, if there was any blemish in his character? And he said that Krishna is the greatest brahmachari. And then he started to glorify Krishna. And this way, they were actually insulting Krishna. They're saying that once Jarasandha, when he was considering Krishna, when he heard about Krishna, what Krishna was doing, that Krishna killed Kamsa, his son-in-law. Jarasandha's daughter was married to Kamsa. So he became furious. And he was insulting Krishna. Somebody told him that Krishna, about Krishna's wonderful power, that he lifted one hill one mountain. He just lifted one mountain and held the mountain on his little finger of the left hand for 7 days. So Jarasandha said, these are just some cock and bull story. Maybe he lifted a mushroom and now that mushroom, it has been magnified into a mountain. So this is how the fools deride Krishna, not understanding who he actually is. And if we understand who Krishna actually is, then there is no difficulty in accepting his inconceivable potency. If we understand that just by Krishna's will, innumerable universes are floating in the sky, in the space, then will it be difficult to understand that Krishna could lift a mountain? Actually, Krishna doesn't even need to lift a mountain with his finger. Just by will, he can make innumerable universes float in the space. But Krishna does that just to make our hard hearts melt with some sort of appreciation for him. When we say that he is making all these universes float in the sky, in the space, then we cannot actually conceive of what it actually means. That when he lifts his the Govardhan Hill and holds it on his hand, then at least we can conceive of what it actually, that we can relate to it. That how impossible a task it is. So in order to make things, make his power conceivable to our tiny little brain, Krishna acts in this way. Therefore, when we read about Krishna, we must begin from there. We must try to understand Krishna's position first. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, it has been instructed that Srimad Bhagavatam must be studied from first canto onwards. First, second, third, fourth. Because 10th canto that describes what Krishna's pastimes, unless and until we understand who Krishna is, we won't be able to appreciate it. But by approaching the 10th canto through first, second, third, fourth cantos, we gradually get to know who Krishna is. Because in other cantos, Krishna's activities, Krishna's incarnation's activities and Krishna's devotees' activities have been elaborately explained. And one very important thing is that this subject matter about Krishna, who is actually beyond our sense perception. Therefore, Krishna is called Adhokshaja. Akshaja means senses. And Adhokshaja means beyond our senses. So Krishna is beyond our senses. Krishna is beyond our vision. Krishna is even beyond our mind. Krishna is even beyond our intelligence. So that personality who is inconceivable for us, in order to understand him, we must approach a qualified teacher who actually reveals the knowledge of the scriptures. The scriptures that are describing the glory of Krishna is revealed by a bona fide teacher or a bona fide spiritual master. And without the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, we can never come to the right conclusion. And we'll end up with conclusions like, Bhagavad Gita was not spoken at the Battle of Kurukshetra. It was not spoken by one man, Krishna. Over a period of time, so many people added things. But these asses do not know that it is a custom in the Vedic culture that the scripture shouldn't be tampered. Nothing should be added to the scriptures and nothing should be deducted from the scriptures. Like consider that how baseless that claim actually or that presentation is. You take a Bhagavad Gita written 1,500 years ago in South India. You find very old Bhagavad Gitas from South India, written in Tamil. All those languages, Sanskrit, the script is Tamil. Then you take another, you find another Bhagavad Gita which is 2000 years old, from North India. Another Bhagavad Gita 500 years old, from East India. And another Bhagavad Gita 1500 years old, from West India. Although written in different times, in different scripts, has the same number of verses, saying the same thing. No, not a single word is different. Scriptures are, at least those who are the followers of the Vedic cultures, they do not tamper scriptures. Because they know that tampering the scriptures is the most grievous offense. And to be on the safe side, it's better not to listen or hear or read these people's writings which do not actually have the right understanding. Srimad Bhagavatam says, just as milk, when it is touched by the lips of a serpent, turns into poison. The nectarian words of the scriptures, when spoken by an unauthorized person, an atheistic person, non-believer, becomes like poison. So, Sanjay, do you have any more points? Okay. I'm sorry, at times, I was quite heavy with my presentation. But, yes, you get angry. I get angry, when I hear people, making this kind of statements. Prabhupada used to get very, very annoyed. Prabhupada used to, in his Bhagavad Gita commentary, he mentioned about this kind of commentaries. Like one commentator says that Krishna is not a person. Battle of Kurukshetra didn't take place. It was just all imaginary. The body is the battle of Kurukshetra. And the good propensities are Pandavas, and the bad propensities are Kauravas. So the body is the battlefield of Kurukshetra, etc., etc. And the unknown within ourselves is Krishna. That unknown within ourselves is Krishna, but Krishna is not actually a person. Krishna is not a reality. But even recently, they tested the soil of Kurukshetra, and they found that the soil has been radioactively fused by radioactivity. Even recently, near Dwarka, they from the depth of the ocean, they found the ruins of a city. And in India, although Krishna performed his pastimes 5,000 years ago, everyone knows him, and everyone at least knows about him, and most of them appreciate him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And who are the ones who actually recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Not just some fools or sentimentalists. They are all great scholars, great learned sages. Arjun, after recognizing Krishna's identity, Arjun is saying that Ahuste Vishayo Sharva Devarshi Naradas Tatha Ashito Devalo Vyasa Sayam Chaiva Bravishime. That the great sages have spoken about you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ahusta Vishara Sarve, all the sages, not just one or two sages, all the sages. And who is he naming them? Narad, who is the sage of the heavenly planets, Devarshi, Narad. Devarshi, then Asita, Devala, Vyasa. So all the great personalities have recognized Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's actually a matter of being properly exposed to who Krishna actually is. If we take some half-baked understanding, then obviously we'll end up in misunderstanding. If we study all the Vedic scriptures, then we can see Krishna's identity becomes exceedingly clear. Not only Mahabharata and Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, practically every Puran is recognizing Krishna's supremacy. Okay, thank you all very much. Does anybody have any question? Mr. Balasubramanian? What dangers we should be aware of. You see, the first thing that we must be aware of, or the first danger is, you know, the authenticity or eligibility of the person. The person who is speaking about it, what is his authority? Say, if you get some serious disease, will you just go to anyone and everyone for treatment? You will see that the person you are going to is a qualified doctor, right? Now, if somebody comes to you and, you know, who is not actually a qualified doctor, will you allow him to treat you? Never. But similarly, you know, someone who doesn't actually have the basic qualification, can we ever allow him to kind of instruct us on this most important topic? So the first thing we have to see, what is the eligibility of the person? And there comes the consideration of who is that person's guru. From where, like from which medical school did he get his degree? So similarly, with this subject, you know, what is his disciplic succession? Right? So that is the first thing that we have to consider. And then we have to see how much that person has grasped, or how good a student he was of his spiritual master. How good a disciple he is of his spiritual master. So that is the main qualification. And as I said, like this knowledge, I mean, say that when we present, I mean, we are not presenting from our, you know, fertile brains, right? It's not just some product of our imagination. It is the way we got it from Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada also did not concoct anything. Prabhupada got it from his spiritual master. His spiritual master got it from his spiritual master. Right? And this way it goes all the way back to Krishna. There's an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. So that is what we have to see first. And then, the guru or the teacher's qualification is that he must know Krishna. Now, how much he is talking about Krishna, how much he is revealing the identity of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. Now, do the Mayavadis do that? They actually stab Krishna from behind. So that's why, you know, should just avoid them like plague. I actually heard it from one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. He was making that point how Krishna was controller of time. So the point actually was that in Bhagavad, when one may say, well, how could Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita just before the battle of Kurukshetra, where actually the conch shell was blown. So how could, where was the time? So the understanding is Krishna sort of expanded that 1 second into whatever time it took to speak Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And Krishna can do that. If Krishna can contract time, 6 months to one night, he can jolly well expand it, expand 1 second to half an hour or 45 minutes, whatever it takes to speak Bhagavad Gita, 700 verses. Obviously, the battle didn't stop. The conch shell was blown. So that means battle already started. So they didn't even have 1 minute. But actually the thing was expanded into. Just 1 fraction of a second was expanded. And just Krishna just spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Who are they, Jaya and Vijaya? Then in Treta Yuga, they were Ravan and Kumbhakarna. And then in Dwapar Yuga, they were Shishupal and Dantavakra. Well, I just remembered, Anamika asked a question also. This is, where is Anamika? Okay. So Anamika's question was, why it is said that that becoming a devotee of Krishna means inviting misfortune? Often people say when you become a devotee of Krishna, you lose everything. It's true, Kakila? Yeah. So, yeah, first of all, it's not true, but in some cases it's true also. In some very special cases. Like very special cases like Prabhupada's case. Prabhupada often mentioned that Krishna was very merciful that he took away his material attachments. I mean, all his material attachments. But that was when Prabhupada was 50 years old. It actually happened in the form of Prabhupada's wife was not so favorable. And the ultimate snapping point, or as they say, that the last straw that broke the camel's back was one day Srila Prabhupada's wife sold the Prabhupada's manuscripts of Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada was writing in India you sell old newspapers and old papers. You get the hawkers to come and buy it. And she stole it to have tea and biscuits. And so that was it. So that day Prabhupada left his house. And later on Prabhupada said that it was Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada said that Jashaham Anugrindhami Parishyata Dhanam Shamai. Upon whom I bestow my mercy, I take away his possession. But that happens in a very, very advanced, in case of very, very advanced devotees, not with some neophyte devotee. You see, I'll tell you how and why. You see, Krishna is actually a very expert fisherman. Krishna, just as a good fisherman or good angler, not a fisherman, but angler. Like, when he catches a fish, what does he do? Does he immediately pull the fish out of the water? No. He plays around with the fish. Sometimes he lets the fish feel that he is free. And the fish runs away and then he pulls the fish. This way he plays. Similarly, Krishna also plays with us. You see, when one swallows the bait and gets hooked by Krishna. See, Krishna, the re of Krishna is like a hook. And when one takes to, when one accepts the holy name of Krishna, when one starts to chant, the holy name of Krishna, he gets hooked. Sanjay, you also got hooked. So, he gets hooked. So that means he can never, once one got the taste, or once one has been hooked by Krishna, there's no way he can get out. But Krishna will pull him out in his own sweet time. And what Krishna does, like when one becomes a devotee, Krishna actually fulfills his desire. Krishna under all circumstances fulfills the living entity's desire. Not only his devotees. Krishna fulfills everybody's desire. But with non-devotees, Krishna will fulfill the desire to the extent he has his piety, punya. You know, punya or piety is like the pious deeds in his credit is something like money. Piety is subtle money. Just as when you have money, whatever you desire, you get it very quickly, very easily. If you have money, you can get it very easily. But if you don't have money, then you can't get it, no matter how much you desire it. Now, the money is in a gross way. Money is a gross aspect. But piety is a subtle aspect of wealth. Now, when one has punya, then he very easily gets whatever he wants. He simply desires and he gets it. And we find that with some people it's like that. Like some individuals are born in a very wealthy family. And just by being born in the family, he becomes a millionaire. The child didn't even do anything. But he is a millionaire. Why? Because he is born in a certain family. Why is born in such a family? Because of his previous pious activities. Anyway, so for ordinary people, those who are not devotees, Krishna fulfills their desires sitting in the heart as a witness. He fulfills the desires according to their piety in stock. But with a devotee, Krishna actually takes a very special care. Devotee is like Krishna's own children. And whatever a devotee, and sitting in the heart of the devotee, Krishna knows what the devotee desires, what the devotee's desire is. And like a loving father, he provides whatever he feels is going to be beneficial for the devotee. Just like an obedient son of a rich father doesn't have to ask anything from the father. The father will provide. Anyway, so the point is that in the initial stage, one will experience that his desires are very easily being fulfilled. But then, going through those fulfillment of his desires, he comes to a point when he feels that I don't really need this thing. Why am I asking for this thing? So he doesn't desire those things anymore. And because these material possessions or material attachments are impediments to our spiritual advancement, Krishna gradually starts to remove them as a
devotee makes advancement. So he, Krishna, removes them. And then finally, whatever last attachment there may have been, Krishna actually takes it away. Now, one important point we have to consider here is that, well, even if it is a fact, even if we see that, yes, devotees have lost, but now the question is, did the devotees lament after they lost something? No, devotees are happy. One example that Anamika was giving was about Mirabai and Narsimha. Now, yes, Mirabai was a queen, but she became a mendicant. Now, was she lamenting as a mendicant? Oh, where is my palace? Where is my servants? Where is my ornaments and jewels? No, she was happy just singing the glories of Krishna in Vrindavan. So, if ultimate consideration is, what is the state of that person's consciousness, whether he is happy. Now, there are some people, in spite of having everything, they are always lamenting. Now, which situation is better? A person who doesn't have anything as his own, but happy within. Or a person who apparently has a lot, but he is in a miserable state internally. Now, whose condition is better? It's obvious. Because happiness, joy, or real happiness is an internal factor. It's an internal thing. It's not an external thing. It doesn't depend upon anything external. As we develop our love for Krishna, as we develop our relationship with Krishna, from within we experience that joy. And as we become attached, as we develop this relationship with Krishna and experience the spiritual joy, we automatically become detached about our material attachments. I was actually giving one example when I was briefly discussing about that it is not actually important what other people think. The most important thing is how we are feeling ourselves. Like other people, they, like, for example, if Sanjay gets a very big offer from America, some arrangement is made and say that he'll be offered a palace to live in and 24 cars, an aeroplane and so on and so forth, then he will leave this house in England, he'll leave England and go away. Now some of his neighbors and others may say, look what happened, he built just a new house and he left that house and gone away. But they don't realize that he left this house because he got something which is much more precious. So that is what happens to a devotee, and that's why he voluntarily gives up. Like, in our society, there are so many Western boys and girls who are not even aware of this Krishna consciousness before. But they have given up everything and moved into the temple. Now, why did they do that? Like, did Krishna take away? No. Krishna is prepared to give them everything, but they have given up. Because they know that staying in that atmosphere is going to be an impediment for the spiritual progress. You got the answer, Anamika? Okay, I'll take the last question. Tulsidas, actually, he's much after, like Valmiki was in Treta Yuga.
Tulsidas was about 400-500 years ago. He wrote Ramayana in Hindi. He's from Bihar. He wrote Ramayana in Hindi, but his Ramayana is not completely in line with Valmiki's Ramayana. He introduced many things on his own. Okay, Hare Krishna.